Warning: The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Talk radio for the thinking person, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Life is a pretty heavy struggle. People in the third world know it from the day they're born until the day they die. They know that they're going to be struggling every second of their lives for survival. Now, we used to know that in America. But we don't know it anymore. People think that life is, as they say, just a bowl of cherries. It isn't. And that's why so many children break down, because of false expectations. Someone uses this word on them. Whatever the word may be, they fall apart. But if you teach your child from birth that life is going to be hard, they're going to do a lot better. And that leads us to this campaign. If this campaign teaches us anything, it's about how hard life is at any level. Here are two very, very, very successful men. Trump far more successful than Cruz, but Cruz is enormously successful. He's a U.S. senator, after all. And look what they're doing to each other, and look how hard they're working. Look how hard they're willing to work to do even better in their lives. So what does that tell you? It tells you that Darwin was right. It's a continuous struggle. And I don't know, it keeps me going. Some days when I get up and I think, you know, this is too tough, or what's the point of doing it anymore? Well, what's this with the election? How much more can I take of this? It's boring. And I think about it. I said, tell me what's easy in life. Is retirement easy? Is just simply drifting off after working X number of years, building a business and cashing in, is that easy? How many people do you know that have retired who do it successfully? I would guess very few. A lot of men retire, they become aimless drunks. They have nothing to do with their lives. All they do is drink. They don't know what to do with themselves. They're terrified of the black hole of the day, which is, of course, why they listen to me. I fill up 3 hours of their day, and then they listen to other talk shows before me, after me, and that becomes their life. I understand that. They live through us. But that's no life. Now, where am I going with this? To this question. I saw a story that I thought would be of interest to you. Is it sane to want to die at 75? This idea was put forward a year ago by Ezekiel Emanuel. His brother is Rahm Emanuel, a Chicago mayor, a good friend of Obama. And he wrote an article that was very peculiar entitled, Why I Hope to Die at 75. It's an interesting article if you believe in euthanasia. Hitler would approve of it. I mean, Hitler thought people should die at earlier ages. If they didn't like their politics, if he didn't like the fact that they weren't perfect, they weren't Aryan enough, he terminated them at an earlier age. The abortionists like to terminate people that aren't perfect at an earlier age, by the way, because you can sell the baby body parts for a profit and call it wholesome, call it women's health. But is the concept of preferring to die at age 75, considering the long-term care problems that millions of Americans may be facing down the road, of any significance? Do you think that when we read an article like this written by the brother of the Chicago mayor, the brother of one of the biggest agents in Hollywood, and a close ally of President Obama, don't you think that we're moving towards the age when the government will start capping the age at which we can, beyond which we can't live? You know, it's too expensive after 75. So you're going to report to the life after death clinic, the government-run eternal life clinic. And in the eternal life clinic, you're going to be given a clean robe. You're going to be given a wonderful cocktail. And then society will be rid of you. I think so. That's where we're going. This is the lunacy of the left. They're now arguing that it's a crisis to pay for long-term care. It's a burden on senior citizens themselves to live past a certain age. And long-term care is unaffordable, and therefore we should terminate your life at a certain age. I don't know what you can say about a thing like that, but that is a topic, right? It's more interesting than hearing the word Cruz or Trump for the next 3 hours. I have other stories I'm going to get to. I have a big announcement to make, which I may as well make right now. Donald Trump, to follow up on America First speech, with appearance on the Michael Savage Show tomorrow, Friday. Tell your friends on all social media. He's not an easy guest to get. Yes, it's a big deal. Especially after the America First speech, he's a real hard guest to get. And if you say, oh, ho-hum, I've heard him before, well, then you're an idiot. If you think that when he comes in the show, he doesn't make news, that's because your ears are clogged with cotton. In his desire to reach a wider audience of thinking voters, Donald Trump will appear on this show tomorrow to further define his foreign policy. Misinterpreted as isolationist by internationalists, Mr. Trump's foreign policy is based more on making America's interests dominant, not subservient. Instead of provoking Russia, as Obama has done, Trump wants peace, prosperity, and trade with Russia. Instead of carrying the entire defense costs of NATO, Trump wants NATO member nations to pay their fair share of defense costs. That is what you will hear tomorrow, I suspect, on this program on your local station. And if that's not enough for you, then nothing will be enough for you. The phone number here is 855-407-282. Let me begin with a soundbite that's worth listening to. I want you to see how insane the far left has gone in destroying all standards and values in the country. You know how when you go into a butcher store and you buy a piece of meat, you want a fair count on the scale, measures and weights. Going back to Roman times, the governments used to hire weights and measures officials to go around to make sure even the Romans weren't robbing people, making sure the scales were accurate. Weights and measures. Every society on earth has standards. Because Obama is such a devious president, because he is so divided, black against white, gay against straight, man against woman, Asian against Hispanic, Democrat against Republican, is the only thing that he knows. That's how he got where he is, through divide and conquer tactics, taught to him by old Saul Alinsky, his old friend, and all of the other commies that raised him. He has now led us to believe that there should be no standards in America with regard to education, regard to achievement on tests. And now we hear from a so-called journalist named Mona Chalabi, who I assume, well, I can make some assumptions about her, which I won't do. She's a journalist who now says that correcting grammar is racist and an expression of white privilege. Listen to clip number 11.
It doesn't take much to see the power imbalance when it comes to grammar snobbery. The people pointing out the mistakes are more likely to be older, wealthier, whiter, or just plain academic than the people they're treating with condescension. All too often, it's a way to silence people. And that's particularly offensive when it's someone who might already be struggling to speak up. We should spend more time listening to what others have to say and less focusing on the grammar, what they say it with.
So in other words, grammar is now a mark of snobism and racism. I told you weights and measures. Soon they're going to say, how dare you weigh that piece of meat? I want a whole piece of meat and I want to pay you $1 for that steak. Otherwise, I'm going to assume you're not giving me the whole steak for a dollar because you're a racist. No, eliminate weights and measures too. Throw out grammar, throw out weights and measures, throw out the SATs, throw out grades. You shouldn't have grades. Because grades are meant to show some people do better than others. And you can't have that in a emerging communist America. Everyone has to be equal. There must be equal outcome. And therefore, everyone is equal to everyone else. In fact, in Animal Farm, some animals are more equal than others. And so therefore, we should have no grades whatsoever. Just let anyone go to college, and any college they choose, by the way. They shouldn't have to go to Suffolk Community College. After all, they didn't have the same chances that the rich white people did. So they should all go to the best colleges in America. Whether they can keep up is irrelevant. That would be a further sign of white privilege. And if they want to be a nuclear physicist, they should be given a Bachelor of Science in Nuclear Engineering, even if they can't add. Because that way, they won't be denied access to jobs at some of the great defense contractors. This is where this goes. This is insanity. This is the world we're living in. This is the world of invented reality. It's a separate world. It's a world I don't live in. I grew up speaking stumbling English in some ways. My grandmother spoke foreign languages to me. She didn't even speak a word of English. Did you know that? Did I ever tell you that? She was my favorite person. I loved her. She spoke to me in two foreign languages. She did not understand a word of English. And I must tell you that I loved her very much. I didn't look down on her that she didn't speak English. I loved her. The point I'm making is I struggled for everything I have in my life because I recognized from an early age that life is struggle. And the day you cease struggling is the day you're dead. And that is the danger of the society we're living in today with the Bernie Sanders lies that come out from the top down. That people who get ahead are doing it at your expense. People who get ahead are doing it because of white privilege. People who get ahead are doing it because they stole something from you. People who have a better car stole that car from you. People who are walking down the street who look happier than you stole your happiness from you, so you have a right to slash them in the neck in Manhattan with a box cutter. If you think this is not having an effect on the deranged criminals, you are mistaken. When you listen to this rhetoric coming out of the mouths of Bill de Blasio in New York, and you see the steep rise in crime in New York itself, you think it's disconnected from the rhetoric coming out of his foul mouth? You are mistaken. If you listen to the filthy rhetoric coming out of Bernie Sanders' mouth, he knows he's lying. He knows he's espousing communism. He knows this is all BS. If you think it's not having an effect on people on the bottom, you are mistaken. That's where the riots are coming from. That's where the dissent is coming from. And so, my friends, I have no conclusion to this problem. No solution to the problem. All I can do is define the problem and tell you that life is a struggle. I don't care what your race is. Watch a chicken being born from an egg. I remember when I was a little boy, and I've told the story once before in all these years on radio, my father made me watch a little chick coming out of an egg. We were up in a farm somewhere in Catskill Mountains, and I saw this little bird, this naked little bird without feathers, trying to poke his head out of an egg. And I wanted to help it. I said, Dad, he's struggling. Can't we help him? And he grabbed my little hand and he said, no, Michael, don't. Because if you touch that little bird and you don't let it struggle to come out of the egg, it will die. Back in a minute on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
My Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com. It's the only company I trust to protect my wealth. Call 800-BUY-COIN. All right, so we're getting back to the no-standard society that Obama has created. The Frankenstein in the White House has created a Frankensteinian society. Where now a journalist is saying correcting grammar is racist, it's an expression of white privilege. Now here's a continuance to that. Obama's Department of Justice under Loretta Lynch, Loretta Lynch, Attorney General Loretta Lynch, you talk about no standards. Obama's DOJ continues to refuse to call criminals what they really are. Are you ready? Obama's Justice Department under Loretta Lynch now calls young criminals justice-involved youth. The Justice Department announced a plan to throw $1.75 million at young criminals in hopes that they don't become adult criminals. However, the fog that they created with linguistics is bizarre. And they're calling them by that name, justice-involved youth. Is what you're now supposed to call juvenile delinquents, also known as young gangsters. This is not a euphemism. This is an example of what I'm talking about, the insanity of the left, if you want to put it in more broad terms, and the insanity of liberalism, if you want to even make it more crafty, is now reaching a point of total insanity. In other words, there are gradations of insanity. When I defined liberalism as a mental disorder in 2005, it was already seen as an advanced mental disorder. But under Obama, it's become an incurable mental sickness. You're calling a young criminal justice-involved youth? You are saying that if you are trying to be grammatically correct, you are a racist? If you correct someone's grammar, you're now you're expressing white privilege. Tell me how this ends unless we stand up to these jackals. Tell me how this ends. Tell me how it ends. Here's how it ends. It doesn't end. You stand up and you fight it. Wherever it appears, you stand up and you smile and you fight it. Otherwise, you're going to lose everything. Your children will inherit nothing. You don't have to get mad at the person. You can laugh at them. You could say there are standards in every society. What are you trying to do, turn us into primitives? Even a primitive society in which I've worked, they have standards of behavior, standards of performance, standards of character, I spent many a year in villages in the South Pacific. There were men who were better hunters than others. They were revered as better hunters. There were women who were better dancers than others. They were considered better dancers than others. Do you think they would be foolish enough in a village that lives off the land to say that all dancers are equal, all hunters are equal? And if a guy couldn't hunt at all, they would make him the chief of the tribe? How long would that society, that tribe last? About as long as this society is lasting with this kind of rubbish. So why am I telling you this? Well, I'm not so sure why. I'm an intuitive guy, and I feel like talking about this because I think that since I am saying to you that life is a struggle, and the left is winning this battle, they're winning the battle through every trick in the book, and they're winning it through tricks of racism itself by calling you a racist, then you have to stand up and fight back. And there are ways to fight back with it without getting vicious or angry. Because once you become vicious and angry, you'll lose it all. Remember the great poem, If, by Rudyard Kipling, which I'm not going to quote to you right now because I can't recall the exact phrase of that poem that I want to quote. It's something along the lines of, if you can keep your head when all those around you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, then you will be a man, my son. And that's what you have to strive for. We are losing our society because the jackals have been set loose by the illegitimate left, and they're just getting warmed up. They are going to riot in every city where Donald Trump appears because George Soros, the most evil man on earth, funded them. Did you know that?
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
Okay, look, this whole thing requires a little coordination. I was reading that creative people might secretly be psychopaths, according to scientists. I can just imagine who wrote this one. Researchers at De La Salle University in Manila, a really high point of learning. This came out of Manila. You can imagine how brilliant the scientists are. You believe that psychopathic traits might actually be key to creativity. No kidding. The researchers who examined 503 participants with gambling tasks and questionnaires believe that impulsive risk-taking, a psychopathic trait, might be key to creative people's success. I really can imagine these scientists. Anyway, they say that there are a lot of psychopaths out there who are creative. We argue that emotional disinhibition in the form of psychopathic boldness is actually integral to some creative personalities and functionally related to the creative process. Generally, then, they write, a creative field might not just shape a person into a more arrogant or dishonest personality. It might be actively selecting them, not for the sake of having disagreeable traits, but because such traits meaningfully co-vary with creativity itself. So these are academics who make very little money, who are jealous of everyone outside the academy, and now they're saying anyone who's an artist who's successful, anyone who's a business person who's successful, any sports figure who's successful is a psychopath. They got there through psychopathic behavior. Again, this is a continuation of the academic left. And they say there's a surprisingly large number of psychopaths in the workplace. And they're expert manipulators. It says that around 3 to 4% of senior positions in business are occupied by psychopaths, as opposed to 1% in the population as a whole. What city did they live in, 1%? Again, going back to my youth in New York City, I have to tell you, remember, I don't know how old I was, 10, 11. My father used to read the New York Post, and he started to laugh on the couch. I said, what are you laughing? He said, this article says that 98% of people in New York are neurotics. I didn't even know what a neurotic was, but I knew it was funny. Of course, I think the number has gone way up and moved into the psychotic department, especially from the highest office in the city down. It says, psychopaths and other manipulators who, with dark triad traits, that's good. Dark triad traits, such as being narcissistic, are best at dealing with people in person, where they can switch on the charm. If you want to catch them out, they advise communicate by email or any other online means rather than face-to-face negotiation. And this was analyzed by people who had dark triad traits who became volunteers on how to find out and call out rather psychopaths. They conclude their article by saying, we can also conclude that it is very likely that the qualities that allow these people to successfully charm, manipulate, intimidate, or exploit others appear to require a live, in-person audience. Okay, so this opens up another set of questions for this program today. Have you ever been around or worked with someone you believe to be psychotic? Do you know any geniuses? Are you a genius? If so, do you think you may be psychotic? I think these are funny questions, because I know I'm going to get some people who do. I'm going to answer the question honestly. You know, there's a misnomer in society that when I was young and very creative and was unsure of myself, and I used to wonder about things about myself and, you know, which way I would go in life. There was always the pull in both directions. The creative side, and then there was the left brain side that, you know, had to go linear. I didn't know at that time that you could be both, you know, creative and linear. In fact, people are the most successful incorporate those two sides of their being, if you want to put them in that category of two sides. And you can't just go down the linear path and hope to succeed to any great extent in life. You have to use the creative side as well. The trick is to integrate creativity with the linear mind. I don't want to get off the track here. This is a show that all you want to hear is Trump Cruise, Trump Cruise, Trump Cruise, Trump Cruise, Trump Cruise, Trump Cruise. I'm not going to do Trump Cruise today. I'm taking a day off from Trump Cruise, if you don't mind. We're going to do Trump tomorrow when he's live on the show, as I said to you, where he'll follow up with his great speech. And we'll talk about that, and it's enough. I'm not doing this 5 days a week. If you want to hear 5 days a week, there are other places that you can go to, and you may be going there. I don't know. I know looking at my ratings, they're superb. They're off the charts. They're great in the big markets. And that's all I know. I mean, if I was digging a hole for myself by talking about other things, I wouldn't do it. But I have to do it. See, this is an example of what I'm talking about. If I had a strictly linear mind, I could only talk about Trump and Cruz ad infinitum 3 hours a day. I couldn't do radio. I wouldn't be on the air. I wouldn't have lasted a month, let alone 22 years. You have to invest yourself in the other sides of life. There's so much more to talk about, for God's sakes. And talk it is. This is a talk show. And I pride myself on having the best callers in the business. And let's begin with one of the best callers in the business, Sandra, WMAL, Washington, D.C. Sandra, what's on your mind today?
Yes, hello, Dr. Savage. I just wanted to point out how alarming that disposition matrix that Obama's thinking about implementing with this, cap of 75 years old. And I think what's really...
Wait, let's not get mistaken here. I didn't say Obama's thinking of doing that. I said that more than a year ago, his very close associate, Ezekiel Emanuel, a nationally recognized doctor whose brother is Rahm Emanuel, who's close to Obama, wrote an article entitled Why I Hope to Die at 75, but he was also one of the architects of Obamacare. So you can only assume that at the higher reaches of liberalism, they're thinking about it. That's what I said.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Very unnerving. Especially when you think about it, our oldest and wisest citizens who really know history with respect to our country would be the first to go. They'd work their way down, I guess.
That's a good way to erase the national memory, sure. Eliminate all memory of the nation by wiping out the older people. Then you have a youthful nation of idiots. Okay, well, all right, that's why I pointed it out to you. If Ezekiel wrote it, and he was one of the architects of Obamacare, and Emanuel is so close to Obama, and the brother runs the biggest talent agency in Hollywood, they are thinking about this at a very high level. Of course, not to apply to them. It wouldn't apply to anyone in their own circles. They would be exempt from such a rule. It would probably be limited to certain other people. WMAL again, Washington, D.C. Skip, I don't want to skip. Skip is on six. Skip, what's on your mind?
Dr. Savage, it's a pleasure speaking with you. You reminded me of the movie Logan's Run when you're talking about the mandatory death at a certain age. Of course, that's a movie from the 70s with Farrah Fawcett and Michael York. And they pushed the age down to 30 and lived happily until then. It seems so many of the dark dystopias that are probably our future were written about decades ago. I think of Harrison Bergeron also by Kurt Vonnegut, the whole concept that you have equal outcomes no matter what. So I just wanted to mention that to you and your listeners.
Yeah, well, that's how communism was sold in Russia originally, which was class envy, class hatred, class warfare. you know, screw the rich, eat the rich, take from the rich because they took from you. And, of course, it destroyed Russia for decades. And the only time Russia climbed out of that hole of communism and started to thrive were in the early years of this revitalization of Russia, where, of course, there is an autocratic leader named Putin. But by no means is he as draconian as Obama makes him out to be. Obama is far more draconian than Putin in the minds of any objective analysis. Any. Obama is a monster. The people are more frightened of Obama in this country. Obama's opposition in this country is more frightened of him than the opposition is of Putin in Russia. You are afraid the IRS will audit you. You are afraid that DHS will listen in on you. You are afraid that NSA is listening in on you. You are afraid of all the government agencies because you despise this government. You know it's true. So what does that tell you? That Obama's not a dictator? But you see, you don't see it because the media wouldn't let you even think about that. Well, these are some of the thoughts going around. You get it? If you care to comment on any of them, I think it's great. The psychopath thing, society terminating people. And yesterday I talked about Trump using the America First foreign policy. And I went back in history with you on this program, first in talk radio to do so. I played you sound bites of Charles Lindbergh, who was one of the leading proponents of the America First policies at that time. And I warned you that Trump's most vociferous critics will use this phrase, America First, to link him to Nazism. And it hasn't happened quite yet, but it's coming very soon. And my guess, it will come from the conservatives before it comes from the liberals. Mark my words. In fact, you're going to get a gold star today. Anyone who could tell me who in the media thus far has written an article comparing Trump to a Nazi because of using the America First slogan will get a free copy of either Government Zero or Teddy and Me. Actually, I don't know if that's grammatically correct, but that was the title that's coming out in about a week, my dog book. You know what I haven't done? I haven't read it to you yet. I'm holding my ammunition on that one because the writing is very poetic. It's very good. I don't know if people are interested in literature anymore. I think they're interested only in political potboilers. It's hard to say. WABC Tom, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind, Tom?
Mike, that clip you just played with that woman describing, you know, that when you correct someone's grammar, you're putting them down, so to speak. Did you?
No. She said that correcting grammar is racist, and it's an expression of white privilege. That's what she said. And she's a so-called professor.
And did you catch her actually say that usually come from a richer, whiter, and when she said whiter, it just blew my mind. I mean, is there some kind of scale you measure a person? I mean, let's say the whiter they are, the more, you know, racist they are?
That's interesting. Maybe Obama can create a racial anthropology department of the Department of Justice. And in the racial anthropology division of the Department of Justice, they can have everybody report to a government statistics agency where they'll gauge how white you are. And you'll get a scale. Even though you may not be racist, if you're too white, you're going to get a score of 10 on that scale, and the government will have to act appropriately.
Well, what happens if I go in the summertime and I get a nice tan? Do I slide down the scale a little? I'm not as racist then? And then in the winter...
What if you use man tan? What if you go to the government agency for the analysis of how white you are, and you use man tan on the way in order to make sure the government doesn't nail you to a cross? What would happen then?
Mike, it's a crazy world we live in.
Yeah, I understand, but I'm trying to show you how crazy it is. They're saying correcting grammar now is racist, an expression of white privilege. This is coming out of a university. This is 8 years after this happened to us. 8 years after he was foisted upon us. This is what's happening. Okay, here we are. It's now a quarter to the hour on the Savage Nation. If you care to talk about this or any other topic, I'll open the show up on an open mic if you want. If you're not into the esoteric and you want to do straight politics, I'll take it on. I did raise other topics, and I think some of you heard about the psychosis part. And I don't know anyone who's gotten to where they are who doesn't exhibit any of those traits, by the way. That's how idiotic that article was. And they're calling it a psychopath now if you exhibit those. Anyone with a personality is on that scale now considered a psychopath. That's what comes out of a university again. Did you miss that one? Creative people might secretly be psychopaths, scientists warn. And so if you are using any of these tactics successfully, charming people, manipulating them, intimidating them, in any way, if you can charm people, then you are possibly psychotic, according to these professors. I can just imagine what they must be like. I think that's a great topic, by the way, because I don't know anyone who's achieved anything who doesn't exhibit any of these traits, by the way. I mean, psychopathic boldness? How in the world can you do anything unless you're psychopathically bold? How could you pick up a brush to paint? How could you open your mouth to sing or do a talk show? How could you run for office unless you have psychopathic boldness? This just shows you how useless most of these university studies are in the social sciences. Be back in a moment on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. All right, we have breaking news on the Savage Nation. Federal government arrested three relatives of the San Bernardino terrorists. Thank you, Apple Computer, for nothing. You heard me. Today, the federal government busted the brother of terrorist Saeed Rizwan Freak in connection to a marriage scam that only came to light after last year's Muslim jihadist massacre in California. Freak's brother, Saeed Rahel Freak, 31, his Russian wife, Tatiana Freak, 31, and her sister, Maya Chernyha, 26, were all taken into custody from their homes in the eastern suburbs of L.A., prosecutors said. All three were charged with marriage fraud, federal conspiracy, and making false statements. Their phony marriages were basis for filling out immigration papers, obtaining bank accounts and driver's licenses. The arrests had no direct connection to the terrorist attack carried out by Saeed Rizwan Freak and his wife, Tashfeen Malik, who slaughtered 14 innocent people on December 2nd at the Inland Regional Center in San Bernardino. Feds investigating the bloodthirsty duo unearthed the allegedly shady marriages of Saeed Rahel Freak and family friend Enrique Marquez, who was married to Chern. Marquez, 24, is in jail awaiting trial on charges that he provided guns to Saeed Rizwan Freak. Well, there it is. Now, we don't know if this is related to the iPhone hacking, or if they're just digging for more information from these relatives based upon the marriage fraud. Because marriage fraud is so rampant in America today to get a green card that they could have arrested half the people in L.A. and made the charges hold. And walk around New York. Tell me, how many people do you think are here on false green cards with fake marriages? Ask yourself that question. Oh, you think it's a minor amount? I think it's a major amount. In the next hour, we go on to these and other topics and the latest news. Right here. Maybe I should do Dr. Savage.
407-282. Savage is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Talk radio for the thinking person, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
The creative people might secretly be psychopaths, so you have to look into all of his great music. Because if you look back, you'll probably find out that all of the musicians were psychopaths. All the producers were psychopaths. Everyone in the record business was a psychopath. Everyone in the radio business was a psychopath. And we can't have that in the modern society. Everyone should be equal, uncreative. And if you show any signs of creativity, you should be examined by a government psychiatrist to make certain that you don't offend the uncreative. Because I think that soon we will be seeing that there's a power imbalance when it comes to creativity. And it may make the uncreative feel small. I mean, if you have a certain talent, don't you think that it makes the untalented feel less than you, and you think that should be permitted? It's like having good grammar. That's considered now white privilege and racist. And I think that you should really think about a fair and equal society in the new Clinton-Sanders view of America, where creative people are, well, they have their feathers clipped, let's put it to you that way, with medication. Certain medications would be given to the creative to make certain that they don't exhibit any creativity around others because it will upset them. Movie about the Obamas' first date releases first trailer. See, now they start in with the propaganda coming out of Hollywood about how great Obama was. So they're starting now with a movie about their first date. Southside With You, a movie about the early days of Michelle and Barack Obama's relationship, premiered at the left-wing fanatical Sundance earlier this year to widely positive reviews. Yeah, no kidding. I wonder, a negative review of anything about Obama at Sundance? Now, anyone who didn't get the chance to attend the exclusive film festival can get their first look at the Richard Tanney-directed movie with the release of its first trailer. The film chronicles what is apparently Michelle and Barack's first date in Chicago. Parker Sawyers plays the future POTUS, and Tika Sumpter plays a young Michelle Robinson. John Legend serves as executive producer. Southside With You hits theaters on August 19th. So, in other words, they're already laying down the legacy from Hollywood on out about how wonderful Michelle and Barack were. Don't you miss them? Gee, what a fine young couple they were. God, how, if we could only have no term limits, he could be president for life. Gee, wouldn't it be great? See, that's a starting already. So, in honor of the first couple and what I think of them, this parody was created by Jim Verde on the Savage Nation.
In a time of unrest and revolution in the city of Chicago, something lay below the surface of two radical revolutionaries.
We were at a law firm together. I was a summer associate. She was already practicing law. And I had been sort of eyeing her for a while, but she was acting real professional.
So my assumption was this guy's got to be kind of weird.
Love.
He was cuter than I thought he'd be. We clicked right away.
Barack Obama and Michelle Robinson, two radicals falling in love in Southside With You.
We sat out on a curb on a summer day and had ice cream, and that's when I asked her if I could kiss her.
It was a whole date, actually. We spent the whole day together.
One man, one woman, sharing a common goal, transforming a great nation into a racially divided cesspool.
And then we went to see Do the Right Thing.
Spike Lee. Mm-hmm. It just come out.
Barack and Michelle communing over communism.
And that was another thing that drew me to Barack, was his work as a community organizer.
Southside With You, a Hammer and Sickle production, now playing in a theater approved by the state, rated R for Radical Revolution.
Jim, your time is wasted being a call screener. You're really a good radio producer. That's funny. I got to tell you, if I were driving around in a car and I heard it, I'd go to gotten a laugh out of that. It's hard to get a laugh out of anyone, a real laugh today. Obama feels the legacy burn. Yeah, he's already putting out. He got the New York Times writing how he saved the world. Now we got the movie coming out. Well, just watch now. Spielberg, Katzenberg, Matzenberg, and Ratzenberg will have a production for sure in order to continue the tax credits for the movie business. Weinstein has probably got a production in the works about how Obama saved the world from racism or some such thing. I don't know what Weinstein could come up with, but, you know, in order to save the tax credits, I'm sure he'll do what's required. What else is in the news? Who knows? I'm not doing the news. I'm doing topics. And tomorrow, Trump will be on the show to, I think, further explain his America First policy, which, of course, as we expected, would be attacked by the vermin and the left. They're already comparing him to Hitler and Nazism. I knew this would come up. And it already happened with Eli Lake. Yeah, okay, KSFO, John, you're the first to catch that. Go ahead, John. You're on the Savage Nation from KSFO in San Francisco. John, what's on your mind?
Yeah, hey, Mike. Yeah, you're exactly right. Article out of Bloomberg, headline, Trump's new slogan has old baggage from Nazi era. And, you know, it's exactly like you said. They're going to take this and milk it for...
Make him look
bad and evil and all this sort of thing when he's looking after America. So it's...
Eli Lake wrote this. I don't know who Eli Lake is. I have no idea who he is. But he wrote this. He said, Donald Trump has given up on winning historically literate voters. I wonder how many hours it took him to come up with that sentence. How many joints did he have to smoke to come up with that one and high-five his buddies? Yeah, I've got it. Trump has given up on winning historically literate voters. Well, that's a good one. Let's publish that in Bloomberg. Okay, so then the slogan is most associated with Aviator Charles Lindbergh, which I played yesterday. And we onward to Hitler now. They forget that Charles Lindbergh was also a great American and a great American patriot and the first man to fly across the Atlantic. That was already dropped from the legacy of Lindbergh. All right, here it comes. Here it comes. 855-407-282 is the phone number. As the last hour came to a conclusion, I said maybe I should call Dr. Savage to take care of the audience today. But I really wanted to say is maybe I should call Dr. Unsavage into the studio today. Jim, leave some lines open for this one, because Dr. Savage has just entered the studio. I mean, Dr. Unsavage, sorry. And for those of you who know the trick, every few months when I'm willing to risk my vocal cords and my brain, I invite Dr. Unsavage into the studio, and he answers your questions in a way that only Dr. Unsavage can answer the questions. So if you have any politically important questions that you'd like Dr. Unsavage to answer, he is here for the next 15 minutes the doctor is in. We don't have any of those yet, but we will shortly. WABC, Andrew, what's your topic on the Savage Nation?
White people offered to tutor her for free. She's Asian. They tutor Spanish immigrants for free. And right now I'm in the black inner city in Newark, New Jersey. White hockey players from the Devils, they came in and they planted trees, and the school kids that were all black came out and helped them. So helping people is the opposite. Charles Barkley, retired basketball player, I'm a journalist. He covered the college basketball.
All right, but the point was is that a journalist from England said that correcting grammar is racist and it's an expression of white privilege. You're saying the opposite is true.
Hey, Charles Barkley, who's that?
All right, yeah, Charles, he's nobody, Charles Barkley. I once had an interchange with him. Please leave him off my show. Go look it up on YouTube. He didn't come out looking too good. Yeah, on a basketball court, he could kill me. I understand that, but when it came to the court of the brain, he didn't do too well. Very famous YouTube piece. Let's go. What do you want to talk about? Oh, here's a hot one. Connie, WSBA in Pennsylvania. You're a live one on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Well, what's in my mind is that I believe that if you're 75 or above and you are no longer in good health and are becoming a burden on society or your own family, and you've done the best in your life, even if you were intelligent, a scientist, I think it should be decided that this person shouldn't live anymore. And why do I say that? Is because I was a nurse assistant in a different nursing homes, and I worked with lawyers, doctors, that unfortunately were very successful. But taking care of them, unfortunately, was very humiliating for them. They suffered from Alzheimer's, cancer. They were no longer human beings. I'm sorry to say it, but it was the truth. And my coworkers and I talked, is this the kind of life we ever want to live? When we get older.
I'm not going to ridicule what you're saying. I wouldn't have run that topic saying, is it sane to want to die at 75? What you're saying is, oh, yeah, let the state determine that people are too sick to live and terminate their lives. But let me give you some problems with that one. If you permit a state to do a thing like that, they could declare someone sick at 75 who's not sick in order to get rid of them, couldn't they?
Well, no. However, if I may interrupt, let me tell you this. Americans are already destroying themselves before they are 75 years old. Maybe some.
No, but you're saying you've seen a lot of people at 75 who were once functional, brilliant, and now they're reduced to horrible, blah, 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 and you think they'd be better off dead. But what I'm saying is if you turn that power over to the state, it would be abused. Don't you think that there's a lot of abuse that would occur?
Well, let me tell you, I am very cynic in life, and perhaps having worked in this field for so many years somehow damaged me. But I do agree. I think so. I do agree.
In other words, you know, and I know that in dictatorships, things could be done to people that people don't want done to them, right? So what if they have a real political enemy? They could get doctors together to commit someone to a hospital and say the person is too sick to go on, and for their own health, they want to terminate them. You know that that could happen.
Yes, yes.
No, that's one of the problems with letting a guy like Rahm Emanuel's brother dictate such a policy. Now, remember, Ezekiel J. Emanuel is a nationally recognized doctor whose brother Rahm is Chicago's mayor, and they're close friends of Obama, and Ezekiel Emanuel was one of the designers of Obamacare. Now he's saying it's okay to die at 75. So we have to watch out where this is coming from. This is the mark of a fascist government. Once you give the government the right to determine when someone should live and die, don't you see where that's going to go?
Well, yes, absolutely. But however, Michael, take a look at the society we're living in. Most of the people in America, and I see this, are so obese. Many of them are drug users. Many of them harm their own health. Why do we have a responsibility to look after people that harm themselves and end up in conditions that...
Now you're raising a very, very tricky question. I myself don't like having to pay for the care of people who abuse themselves. I don't like having to pay for people who engage in risky sex 7 nights a week, and then I have to pick up the tab for the diseases. I don't like having to pay for the treatment of alcoholics who are incessant drinkers that won't stop drinking, or smokers, or drug users. No, I don't like having to pay for it with increased medical costs, etc. The social costs are overwhelming, and they're uncarryable. You cannot carry that cost. So there has to be consequences for this type of behavior. I agree with you. However, the topic has opened up a topic of discussion, which is, should the state have the right to terminate someone's life at 75 if they're unhealthy? You know where I stand on that. My friend who's listening, what is your name?
Connie from Pennsylvania.
Connie from Pennsylvania?
Yes, yes.
Who are you gonna vote for, Trump or Cruz or Hillary or Bernie?
Oh, no doubt, Mike Trump. Forget about it.
Then I'm sending you a copy of Government Zero. If you would have said Bernie, I would have sent you a bag of old dog food that I can't get rid of. Stay in the line, Connie. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust to protect my wealth and financial future. Call 1-800-289-2646.
You know what they bring today? I looked at a price in a car book. An Olds 442 brought $400,000 at auction. How is that possible?
I was looking in an auction catalog.
I'm a car nut. I always, my whole life, for a couple of years, I went out of the car thing. Then now I'm into it very heavily. An Olds 442 auctioned at $440,000. Can you imagine? You could have bought the showroom for $440,000 when that car came out. But anyway, I mean, this is a muscle car. Let's take a caller. Armando, line 8, KERN country. Love that area near the Grapevine. KERN. Southern California. What's on your mind, Armando?
Hey, Doctor, I'm Savage. I just wanted to ask you a question. I've been hearing a lot of stuff around here. You know, it's a Hispanically predominant area. Everyone's saying that we're going to end up in war with Mexico if Trump gets, if he gets elected and we end up putting up a wall. What do you think?
Well, let me get Doctor and Savage in here because he may have a different opinion than I do. Doctor and Savage, are you here in the studio? Well, here he comes now.
Oh, hi, everybody. What's the question? Trump will bring us to war with Mexico? You're afraid, sir, that Trump's messaging will bring us to war with Mexico?
Great. I just want to know what you have to think, or, you know, what your thoughts on it are.
Well, of course it will. There's no question about it. I mean, such rhetoric is just out of the schoolyard. We can't say things like that to our brothers and sisters south of the border. They're all such fine citizens. They all come here to work. They all love the country. They show their love for the country by not learning English and exhibiting the Mexican flag in America. How can we be rude to them?
How dare us? I mean, we're supposed to accommodate them, correct?
Well, of course, you're asking an absurd question. They're guests in our home. How do you treat guests in a home? You let them eat your food, your lunch, your breakfast, your dinner. You don't ask anything of them. I mean, I don't understand what Trump's thinking. What kind of man is he anyway? Thinking of America's sovereignty, America first? Ah, the Shaw, that's nonsense. No, it's Mexico first. That's what it has to be, Mexico first. That's the right policy for Mexicans, but it's certainly not the right policy for Americans.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Give me a heavy metal song. Wake the audience up. I think they're all on medication today. I got great callers, don't get me wrong. I mean, the thought of euthanasia for people 75 and at the age of 75 has got a lot of callers. Believe me on that one. That's a heck of a topic. It's more interesting than the Donald Ted show. I mean, how much can you talk about that? Maybe ad infinitum. Maybe that's all people want to talk about. I can't do it. You want to talk about Ted, it has to be Teddy and Me, Confessions of a Service Human. That's the only Ted I will refer to as my dog Ted. He's so noble. Don't get me started because I'll start reading from the dog book and you'll really get mad at me. KSFO, San Fran. Let me try it. San Fran. I can't say it. KSFO, San Fran. Well, KSFO, Tom, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Yeah, Dr. Savage, I'm a physician. I did a residency in family practice and a residency in surgery. I've been in practice about 30 years. The end-of-life issue, I don't think people realize the indoctrination of medical students and doctors, residents, and nurses by law. In fact, I think it's now a law in California, the continuing education, end-of-life. And I call it the new abortion because the premise is that it's for people who are in severe pain, you're suffering from their cancer, and this is to alleviate it. Just like in abortion where they said it's for the mother whose life is truly threatened. But that's just entering into the door. It's into people with a little memory loss now. Families are very pressured, and I experienced it with my own 90-year-old mother when I took her to a major university for a problem she had. She was on no medicine. And the big chairman of the department and medical students around it, they got into end-of-life, and they didn't even do a basic Doppler on her circulation. I took her to a private doctor. She was taken care of, and we home care her, and she's been happy for 2 years. Sure, she has some memory problems, but, you know, she's got her personality and her smile.
Doctor, I know where this is leading. I know just where this is leading, especially when you look at the article written by Ezekiel Emanuel, who was one of the architects of Obamacare, saying, why I hope to die at 75. This is an attempt to make us all think that there should be a cap on lifespan. And that anyone who exceeds that cap is being greedy. That's what's coming. Right out of, like Brave New World. That anyone over 75 is greedy, abusing resources, driving up the cost for the young, not letting society grow. You wait and see what's coming. You know I'm resonating with you on this.
Well, yes, you know, and the thing is, the doctors, a lot of them have bought into it, and you'll hear certain phrases they'll use, and we received it as a family. It's all about quality of life, not quantity of life. It's to make the family really feel guilty. And then they talk about, well, you can dehydrate the patient. They'll feel no pain and suffering. Deny them water, just little ice chips on their lips. It's disgusting.
Unbelievable. So this is what went on, this euthanasia in Nazi Germany. And it started with Hitler putting out the message that killing the mentally challenged people was doing them a favor because they would have had a terrible life anyway. That's how it started. People don't realize that this issue was actually used in Nazi Germany the way it's being used by big liberals today in hospitals. And I think they should be very aware of where this is coming from. It's not coming from the right. It's coming from the radical left. Wouldn't you agree with that?
I would. But, you know, the generations of doctors today and the requirements and the peer pressure in the system, I think it's shocking. I don't think people realize. In fact, the reimbursement now, there is now a reimbursement code that you can bill for, and you are required to spend a certain amount of time in your annual checkup talking about end-of-life counseling. Do you have an advanced directive, et cetera, and then you can bill a code for that now.
Well, maybe we can push ahead with a science fiction conclusion to this discussion that some great science fiction writer would be able to pick up on the theme. I would do it if I had the time. I'm not a science fiction writer per se, but believe me, I can see the story. And the story is clearly X years from now,
seniors are being hidden in their houses by families as the government comes to take them away to kill them. There are whole communities of seniors hiding in the forests of America, protected by young, healthy, strong men who don't want to see the seniors exterminated. And it's an entire government of zombies, robots, out to kill the old. Can you see such a story?
I see your next book.
Well, I'm sure somebody will steal that idea right now, and I could care less. I mean, it could be a great book, but I'm not going to write it. If you see it on television, just remember where you heard it first. Well, I'll send you a copy of Teddy and Me just to cheer us all up today, because, boy, this is getting bad. When I see that Rahm Emanuel's brother, Ezekiel Emanuel, who was one of the architects of Obamacare, many of you are afraid of this. You're afraid of it for your parents. He wrote an article entitled, Why I Hope to Die a Year Ago. And he said that living too long may be a loss, especially under rapidly declining or severely disabling conditions. So this concept of living too long is something that many people might think about, and I don't think anyone would discuss it. But when you let the government enter this puzzle, tell me how you think this is going to end up for you. The way it's going to end up is they're going to make it all cost analysis. They're going to say, look, we'd love to see you live as long as you want, but we can't afford to pay for those machines or that medication after 75. You're on your own. And you say, well, I don't want to live in such pain. I'll say, well, we give you an option. If you're willing to agree with us, we will make it as painless as possible, and we will terminate your life for you in a very humane, liberal way, because we don't want you to suffer anymore. You think this can't happen? You heard the doctor just now. Dr. Tom on KSVO just said it is happening. They're already doing it. Now, you see, remember when this started with this transgender business? And now they're having children as young as 4 years old declaring that they're transgender. Do you have any idea how insane liberalism really is? Children have no idea of sexuality. They don't know what their gender identity is. I was told by someone who went to a dinner party last week in Los Angeles, if you can believe this, that some big liberals were there. Of course, they were supporting every liberal cause in the world. They were boasting about how I'm not making this up. They had gone to a party in Manhattan that a couple put on for their 5 or 7 year old who it was called their transgender coming out party. I said, you're making this up just to provoke me, aren't you? He said, no. They had I don't know what they call it. A transgender coming out party for a 5 year old who had decided that he was a girl. This is parenthood? This is parenthood? Are you serious? Do you think this is a sane thing to do with children who are not aware of what their sexuality is? You know, sexuality is as much learned as it is inherent. Did you know that as well? Did anyone teach you that? Study the animal world and you'll understand what I'm talking about. You could brainwash children into thinking anything. You could brainwash a boy into thinking he's a girl. You could brainwash a girl into thinking she is a boy. You can brainwash people into thinking anything if you get them young enough. And so, my friends, this whole idea of terminating life at a certain age may not be so science fictional after all. Now, that's a hard thing to follow up with another idea, because this is pretty heavy stuff, by the way. But I think people are interested in this kind of discussion. But notice where this concept of euthanasia is coming from. The liberal Emanuel brother, the very good friend of Barack Obama, the super liberal Emanuel doctor who helped write Obamacare. And that's why the country is, I think, moving so far to the right that the left can't even see which way the wind blows. That's why Trump will be president. He'll win in a landslide. If only the darn Republicans would get out of the way. If only Ted Cruz would do the right thing and already throw in with Trump and stop it. Stop being stupid. Because right now he's only acting to destroy this momentum. He cannot stop it. He can only impede it. And impeding it is not what we need. This is why even middle-of-the-road people are going to vote against Hillary Clinton. They're not as stupid as she may think. If she makes every issue about a skirt, she's finished.
She has to do a lot more than talk about women's and minimum pay and this and that. It's 1960s retread ideas. No one cares about those topics. Nobody. Except special interests. And I think most people in the middle today know exactly where liberalism will lead. Big government, big liberalism, rather, whichever we want to put it. It will lead to a situation that's uncontrollable. It will lead to things of this nature. If you think Obamacare is a disaster, and notice I rarely talk about it. I was not one of those who talked about it at all. I talked about health issues, not Obamacare, because I knew it was a done deal. There was no way to stop it. Many people wasted a year talking about every day Obamacare. I didn't waste my time. But now I'm telling you what's going to happen unless this monster of government health care is stopped in its tracks. The philosophers behind it are very much akin to the National Socialists under Adolf Hitler. You may not know it because they don't speak German and they don't wear armbands. And they figure that they're such good people, they could never make a bad decision. Liberals always think that they're such good people, they could never be wrong about anything, meaning they can't make wrong decisions. But the people are going to vote. And I believe that no matter what the media does, no matter how many illegals Obama tries to grant amnesty to vote, I think it will be a landslide, maybe on the order of nothing we've ever seen in American history, because what this man has done to this country over the last seven-some years is something that only those of us with an IQ and a historical brain can understand. And there's an awful lot of us. And there's an awful lot of people in the middle who will never, ever vote for Hillary Clinton because they know she is corrupt. And they also know that this corruption did not begin with her, but it will get much worse than it is today. That's my opinion. I didn't want to go there, but I went there. It is now 40-some-odd minutes after the hour, exactly 45 minutes after the hour. This is the Savage Nation. Phone number is 855-407-2822. The website, which I'm going to get to in a minute, is michaelsavage.com, because I've got so many stories I haven't touched, such as 20,000 illegals with criminal convictions released into the U.S. communities in 2015. There's the legacy of Barack Obama. The next time there's a murder or a rape in your neighborhood by an illegal alien who's released from jail, just remember it didn't happen by accident.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Hey, our Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust for wealth insurance, gold and silver. Call 800-BUY-CO-IN.
Look, this topic of death panels is so frightening to people that the lines are so hot. People are touched by this. And it's a big topic, and it's worth talking about. It shows you the legacy of Obama, how deadly it really is on a very human level. You know, how can I put this without getting too personal? I suffer a lot of feelings, let's put it that way, real heavy feelings, and they're not easy to deal with. And when I get into some of my moods, my down moods, I write. And sometimes I write fables and children's stories and music, and you never hear any of it. And I wrote Teddy and Me, Confessions of a Service Human. Well, in that book, in addition to having great pictures of me and Teddy, there's chapter 5, which is a bedtime story that I wrote. And I read to Ted some rainy nights when the thunder scares him. So if you have any children, gather them around the radio, because it's a short story. And I wrote it because sometimes the thought of death and killing and murder gets to me. I can't take a minute of it, a minute longer. And I wrote this inside the book. In the forest there lived some bears, but they were a lost tribe of little bears, very little bears. Whenever someone passed by them, they hid, and so no one had ever seen them. In the village there were hunting dogs, big hunting dogs that hated bears. They were called poodles. Everyone thought that they were cute because they smiled as poodles do, but they were bred to hunt, not to smile. In this village there was a kindly old man who loved both dogs and bears. He cried every time the hunters came home with a bear. So he decided to help both bears and dogs. First he found the smallest of the poodles. Then he secretly married a little poodle to another little poodle, and they had 7 small baby poodles. Then he went back into the forest and found an abandoned baby bear that was left behind after his mama was taken by the hunters. He took the baby bear home and introduced her to the small baby poodles. They all played together in Mr. Kindly's cottage. Then one day the old man thought, "What's going to happen to them when I'm gone? Who will take care of them?" Mr. Kindly decided he would keep choosing from the smallest of these little bears and the smallest of these dogs and helped them have babies. Years later, when Mr. Kindly was gone and his small cottage sat abandoned in the deep forest, a group of school children on a field trip stumbled upon it. They slowly tiptoed in. As they looked around, they found torn and yellowed scraps of pictures showing the kindly old man surrounded by little dogs and little bears, all cozy together around a warm fire in the hearth. The children's teacher wondered where all these cute, furry animals came from and where they went. Deep in the forest, there was a huge, huge tree whose trunk was wider than an elephant. It was more than 200 years old. In this tree, there was a little door carved near the foot of the trunk. This door led to a cave which spread out forever and a mile, and only God in heaven could see where this endless cave led. Somewhere beyond this tree, there is a world where tiny bears and tiny poodles sit together sipping on honeyed leaves no human has ever seen that give all the nutrition needed for kindly bears and kindly dogs to live forever and a day. That's the end of the little story that I read to Teddy entitled, well, I don't know what it's called, but it's in the middle of the book called Teddy and Me, Confessions of a Service Human. And what's interesting is that there's a big picture spread across two pages in the book of me in bed with a loaded shotgun and Teddy reading a newspaper with Teddy staring at the shotgun. It's actually my favorite picture in the book. The publisher didn't want to put it in the book. I had to have a big argument over that one. She said, that picture of you with a loaded shotgun is going to scare off a lot of readers. I said, au contraire, my dear. It will attract a lot of readers. But anyway, that's the bedtime story. I think it was called Dr. Kindly or The Little Bears. And I inserted it into the middle of Teddy and Me. It's out next week or soon thereafter. And you can buy it now on Amazon.com. It's a great book. This is The Savage Nation. When I come back, we'll talk about all the news of the day, including death panels and some such topics, right here on The Savage Nation. I will also read off some of these amazing stories I haven't gotten to. Trump to follow up on America First speech with his appearance tomorrow on The Michael Savage Show. Yes, says CBS, Trump can beat Hillary Clinton. Yes, says Obama. Yes, we can. 20,000 illegals with criminal convictions released into the U.S. in 2015. Yes, we can, Barack Obama. That surely will be your legacy, not the phony movie that they're putting out. This is The Savage Nation when we come back. Oh, there's so much more I haven't even gotten to.
Join The Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Warning, The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Talk radio for the thinking person, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Start with the news headlines, then we'll take your calls on the topics that we've talked about for the last 2 hours. Austria passes tough new law allowing it to shut border to all refugees. Oh, really? A little too late. They let the foxes into the henhouse called Austria, huh? Italy nabs four suspected in ISIS plot to attack Israeli embassy. They don't name them, of course. Oh, yes, they do. They're Muslims. I'm sorry. They all have Muslim names. The Italians nabbed them before they blew up people and killed them. Newsweek cited Milan prosecutor Maurizio Romanelli saying, we heard them say, I want to hit Israel in Rome. One suspect named as Abdurrahman Mukhrich was said to have told him, oh, whatever, you get the picture. Wonderful, terrific, open your borders to him. Go ahead. Radisson Hotel chain is latest U.S. giant to be snapped up by the Chinese. Notice I said Chinese, not Chinese. Chinese. Radisson Hotel chain is latest U.S. giant to be snapped up by the Chinese. A unit of Chinese conglomerate, HNA Group, has agreed to buy Carlson Hotels, which owns brands including Radisson. Maybe the food will get better. I don't know. Maybe instead of those horrendous chicken wings that they serve in these hotels, they'll put out egg rolls or something. Who knows? Might be better. Might be a plus. New York Times boss sued over alleged ageist, racist, and sexist hiring practices.
This is called, this is hanging by his own petard. Paper denies unjustified claims that CEO Mark Thompson introduced culture that favors young, white, and single staffers to older female and black employees. Here we go again. So they're saying that he only wants to hire young, white, unmarried employees. The lawsuit filed on behalf of two black female employees in their 60s in New York on Thursday claims that the New York Times has become an environment rife with discrimination. That's called hung by your own petard, Mr. Sulzberger. Team Obama raising tobacco prices at U.S. military bases to curb smoking. Well, of course, this will only make the guys reach for a Prozac or like drug provided by Obama's pharmaceutical friends who supply drugs for the Army. That's all. Get them off tobacco and put them onto a prescription drug. Well, what could be better than that? Nothing could be better than that. Think of the money involved. This is the Savage Nation. Now let's go to some of the headlines I have not gotten to before you call me on michaelsavage.com. I already covered the 20,000 illegals with criminal convictions released into the U.S. by Barack Obama. Inside North Korea's secret sex parties. Oh, yeah, the fat slob. Schoolgirls as young as 13 are forced into servitude. They have gangs of North Korean criminal military go around to schools and pick the girls out and snatch them away. The fatso's lair. Secret Service plans to raise White House fence by 5 feet. Trump says he'll copy the attacks Bernie used against Hillary. Top L.A. vegan restaurant owners receiving death threats for slaughtering animals. Although they were making their fortune with a vegan restaurant, it turns out that on their farm in Northern California, they were actually raising and eating meat. Okay, so now they're getting death threats from the peace-loving vegans. You know what my headline was? That was even Hitler was a vegetarian. You don't know that. Oh, yeah, didn't eat animals. He just slaughtered people. Michael Savage newsletter, what Iraq has to do with this election. It's very good, these newsletters. They're short outtakes of the show in a written form. And they come into your inbox 3 times a week, and it's free. Feds arrest 3 relatives of San Bernardino terrorists. Yeah. Half of Americans think the nominating system is rigged. Music written by inmates to be performed at the White House. See, they went into one of South Carolina's most dangerous prisons, and they got some of the worst people in America, and they're going to be taken over to the White House to sing some lullabies for the leader-in-chief. The mysterious case of Ted Cruz PAC's $500,000 donation to Carly Fiorina. Little allegation of a little settlement there of some accusations by one of Fiorina's staffers from old honest Ted. If you want to have some fun, there's a bumbling ISIS fighter's final moments linked up from the New York Post that was shot from one of their cameras on their helmets that shows these jihadists before they get killed in a shootout as they go fight out up against the Peshmerga. And you can see that these jihadists are just cowardly losers who are given a uniform and a rocket to terrorize young women and children. But when they're actually facing soldiers who are fighting to kill, they usually get killed and run away, as you'd expect. Marseille synagogue to be converted into mosque. Yeah, that's another little story. Let's see what else is on michaelsavage.com. I'm down on the bottom now. It's a lot of repeats. Listen to trailer celebrant. That's old. No, I got to change the bottom. I got to change the bottom of it. There's a lot of old stuff down there. I got to put new stuff on the website. All right, time to go to the callers on any of these topics, including those that we have been discussing on the Savage Nation. Tommy on WABC in New York City. What's on your mind, Tommy?
Yes, sir, Mr. Savage. I heard you once I say that animals have no soul. I can't see that. You're an animal. You have a dog. You think animals only have souls? Every living thing on this earth has a soul, even trees, plants, everything. And then another.
Well, let's talk about it. No, I think you're confusing the word soul with spirit.
...09, doing utilization. You forgot your history, sir?
Well, now you're getting angry. I just said you're confusing the word soul with spirit. I believe every living thing has a spirit, a life spirit, but I don't believe every living thing has a soul. I believe humans have a soul, and that's different from the spirit.
Really? Animals have no souls, sir?
No. No, animals have spirits. So where do all the animals' souls go after they die? Is there a special place for the billions of slaughtered animals? Where do they go?
It's a savage. This whole universe. There's everything. We can't understand everything, but it's there. You have to believe.
So, no, okay, of the billions of animals that are slaughtered every year, tell me where their souls go, if they have souls. Where do they go?
Back to the universe, and then they come back again. Like the stars, those are the souls.
It's mathematically impossible. It's hard enough to even conceptualize that human souls come back, let alone the billions of animals that are slaughtered every year. I don't buy it. I believe that the soul exists only in the human being, and not in all human beings, by the way. I think looking around the streets of our cities, I think that a good portion of the people are part people. They're not even fully human.
Of course, there's a lot of people walking around with no souls.
Yeah, you can see in their eyes that there's a vacuum. There's nothing in there. The lights are on, but no one's home, as they say. So, look, different belief systems for different people. I believe that God breathes a soul into human beings, but not into animals. He breathes a spirit into animals. That's called their life spirit. I see it in a plant. I hear it in a tree. I mean, if you hear a tree being cut down in a forest, you can hear it groan as it falls. Is that the soul of the tree? Or is that the spirit of the tree? I don't know. I'll let you decide. I'm not here to convince you of either side of that issue. I'm here to just provoke some conversation. Never forget what the word conversation means. I learned it as a young man. I learned it from a Chinese writer named Lin Yu Tang. Conversation means with verse. And the object of conversation is to keep the conversation going, not to cut the other man off and render him speechless, as so many in America think is the purpose of conversation, which is to win the argument. That's a little different. Argument is different than conversation. Unfortunately, in our sick, demented, aggressive society, people have taken conversation to mean competition. It's not about competition. It's about keeping the conversation going. So let's go on with the conversation. WBOB in Jacksonville, Florida. Carl, line 7, go ahead, please. What's on your mind?
I'm going to take the conversation in a different direction. I'm a 57-year-old man who's had more than his share of accidents. And I believe I've used my usefulness up. And if they had doctor-assisted suicide, along with the death panels, I would be the first to sign up.
I can't argue with you. I'm not here to be your psychiatrist. But when you say you've had your share of accidents, do you mean that you're physically so injured that you don't want to live anymore?
Exactly. I take medication to survive. I can't work anymore. I'm about ready to be homeless. I actually am a victim of NAFTA, which decimated the industry I chose back in the 70s, and had to take different...
Hold on. What industry was that?
The needle trades industry. I serviced industrial needle sewing machines for years.
I understand that was once a huge industry in New York City. I had many relatives that were in the needle trades. One of them was called a mechanic. He used to go to sewing machines in these big factories, these garment center factories, and work on the sewing machines. I think that's what you're talking about, right?
Right. I came to Hawaii in 1984. Business was booming. And NAFTA came along and just decimated the industry.
Well, Carl, are you alone? You have no one in your life?
No. I've been married for 30 years. I have a wonderful wife who is the reason I'm living. Otherwise, how
would... Well, what would this do to her if you were to be euthanized?
Yeah, I know she's... this is another story that I don't really want to get into because she's become super dependent on me. She's the reason I'm living still.
Well, you better think about her. Don't think about Carl because Carl is finished in his own mind, but Carl is not finished in her mind, right?
This is true.
All right, so try to imagine what she would feel if you were to die.
Can't. I don't like doing that. I've tried. That's why, again, I'm still here. But
Wait a minute. Hold on. So we're on the road to something here. But I heard that you said you're broken about to become homeless. I don't like that part of it. Is there anything, without turning this show into a Lonely Hearts show, we've got to help you, man. Carl, we got to help you some way. You understand me?
I've tried everything possible. The waiting list for housing assistance is like 3 to 4 years in Hawaii.
Well, the easiest answer to that is go to Mexico and sneak back over the border and change your name to a Mexican name. They'll be waiting for you. They'll be waiting for you with open arms. You'll get housing, medical, legal, new clothing, Obama phones. What more do you need? No doubt you're an American citizen, so you're deprived.
I know. And I'm white also, so.
Well, that's a real deficit in the new America, under Jerry Brown especially. You're not the chosen people. Bob, don't you think that if Donald Trump wins, things might change in America where men like you might be helped?
Well, it's a little too late for me, but I do believe that, yes.
Well, what do you mean too late for you? Your voice sounds like you're full of intelligence and wit. You have your mind, don't you?
The thing is, I have 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to think about this. I don't do anything. I can't really do much of anything. I can't sit. I can't work. I can't...
I don't know how to help you, Carl. What can I do as a radio talk show where you're talking now to a lot of people? What can we do to help Carl?
Well, again, I think it's pretty much too late for me. There's really... I've tried to figure this thing out, and I have...
All right, well, look, I don't know what to say. I'm at a loss. I swear to God, if I could do something for you, I would do it. So what we're going to do is this. Make it a little more personal. Jim, get Carl's email, if he has one, and let's see if we can help him in some way. That's all I can say, Carl. Carl, hang in there. Don't go for euthanasia quite yet. Your wife needs you. See, this is the problem. Phone number is 855-407-2282. KSFO, Bill, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Regarding the soul and animals, they have a limited purpose in the scope of the whole universe, being that they don't worship God. They don't make philosophical plans for the future. So they don't contribute to the evolving supreme being, which we all do in our human experience of ascension towards God.
Well, that's beautifully put, and I agree with that theological analysis. This doesn't mean that we mistreat our innocent friends, does it?
Absolutely not. We learn and have a loving experience from interacting with them, but as I said, they have just a much different and more limited function in the physical universe here.
I agree 100%. The soul is only in human beings and not in all of them either. Would you please stay on the line, Bill? I'm going to send you a copy of Teddy and Me, Confessions of a Service Human. Back in a minute on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Your Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com. It's the only company I trust for tangible assets, gold and silver. Call 800-BUY-COIN. All right, here's another sexual harassment claim from another old actress, you hear? Tippi Hedren, I was sexually harassed by Alfred Hitchcock. She gave a speech before liberals in Hollywood, especially the big liberal, Ben Mankiewicz. He's the clown who introduces movies on TCM, a far-left operative. And here's a woman who was picked out of the gutter by Alfred Hitchcock and made into a world-famous movie star. You may remember the movie Birds, which is considered to be Alfred Hitchcock's last masterpiece. So this woman, found in the gutter, played the main character. But now Hitchcock is dead. God knows how many years he's dead. And she's getting up in front of big libs, giving a speech to this Mankiewicz character, saying that he was harassing her and he didn't treat her properly. Can you believe this? How many years later can a woman still try to get some mileage out of a relationship with a guy who found her and made her into something? Anyway, that's the story. On and on it goes with the left-wing juggernaut biting at the neck of America every day. Her doctor told Hitchcock she was so traumatized from the movie Bird, she needed a week off. When the director said that wasn't possible, Hedren quoted the doctor saying, "What are you trying to do, kill her?" Nevertheless, there it was. Rod Taylor, playing her romantic interest in the Birds, was given instructions to not touch the girl, meaning Hedren. and the possessive Hitchcock gave the same order to Sean Connery. But nevertheless, the girl, who was now an old woman, says that he made advances towards her that were uncomfortable. And of course, Ben Mankiewicz, the nun person, just sat there and broadcast it for the world to hear.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
I want you to see how insane the far left has gone in destroying all standards and values in the country. You know how when you go into a butcher store and you buy a piece of meat, you want a fair count on the scale, measures and weights? Going back to Roman times, the governments used to hire weights and measures officials to go around to make sure even the Romans weren't robbing people, making sure the scales were accurate, weights and measures. Every society on earth has standards. Because Obama is such a devious president, because he is so divided, black against white, gay against straight, man against woman, Asian against Hispanic, Democrat against Republican, is the only thing that he knows. That's how he got where he is, through divide and conquer tactics, taught to him by old Saul Alinsky, his old friend, and all of the other commies that raised him. He has now led us to believe that there should be no standards in America with regard to education, regard to achievement on tests. And now we hear from a so-called journalist named Mona Chalabi, who I assume, well, I can make some assumptions about her, which I won't do. She's a journalist who now says that correcting grammar is racist and an expression of white privilege. So, in other words, grammar is now a mark of snobism and racism. I told you weights and measures. Soon they're going to say, how dare you weigh that piece of meat? I want a whole piece of meat, and I want to pay you $1 for that steak. Otherwise, I'm going to assume you're not giving me that whole steak for a dollar because you're a racist. No, eliminate weights and measures, too. Throw out grammar, throw out weights and measures, throw out the SATs, throw out grades. You shouldn't have grades. Because grades are meant to show some people do better than others. And you can't have that in a emerging communist America. Everyone has to be equal. There must be equal outcome. And therefore, everyone is equal to everyone else. In fact, in Animal Farm, some animals are more equal than others. And so therefore, we should have no grades whatsoever. Just let anyone go to college, and any college they choose, by the way. They shouldn't have to go to Suffolk Community College. After all, they didn't have the same chances that the rich white people did. So they should all go to the best colleges in America. Whether they can keep up is irrelevant. That would be a further sign of white privilege. And if they want to be a nuclear physicist, they should be given a Bachelor of Science in Nuclear Engineering, even if they can't add. Because that way, they won't be denied access to jobs at some of the great defense contractors. This is where this goes. This is insanity. This is the world we're living in. This is the world of invented reality. It's a separate world. It's a world I don't live in. I grew up speaking stumbling English in some ways. My grandmother spoke foreign languages to me. She didn't even speak a word of English. Did you know that? Did I ever tell you that? She was my favorite person. I loved her. She spoke to me in two foreign languages. She did not understand a word of English. And I must tell you that I loved her very much. I didn't look down on her that she didn't speak English. I loved her. The point I'm making is, I struggled for everything I have in my life. Because I recognized from an early age that life is struggle. And the day you cease struggling is the day you're dead. And that is the danger of the society we're living in today with the Bernie Sanders lies that come out from the top down. That people who get ahead are doing it at your expense. People who get ahead are doing it because of white privilege. People who get ahead are doing it because they stole something from you. People who have a better car stole that car from you. People who are walking down the street who look happier than you stole your happiness from you, so you have a right to slash them in the neck in Manhattan with a box cutter. If you think this is not having an effect on the deranged criminals, you are mistaken. When you listen to this rhetoric coming out of the mouths of Bill de Blasio in New York, and you see the steep rise in crime in New York itself, you think it's disconnected from the rhetoric coming out of his foul mouth? You are mistaken. If you listen to the filthy rhetoric coming out of Bernie Sanders' mouth, he knows he's lying. He knows he's espousing communism. He knows this is all BS. If you think it's not having an effect on people on the bottom, you are mistaken. That's where the riots are coming from. That's where the dissent is coming from. Life is a pretty heavy struggle.
People in the third world know it from the day they're born until the day they die. They know that they're going to be struggling every second of their lives for survival. Now, we used to know that in America, but we don't know it anymore. People think that life is, as they say, just a bowl of cherries. It isn't. And that's why so many children break down, because of false expectations. Someone uses this word on them. Whatever the word may be, they fall apart. But if you teach your child from birth that life is going to be hard, they're going to do a lot better. And that leads us to this campaign. If this campaign teaches us anything, it's about how hard life is at any level. Here are two very, very, very successful men. Trump far more successful than Cruz, but Cruz enormously successful. He's a U.S. senator, after all. And look what they're doing to each other, and look how hard they're working. Look how hard they're willing to work to do even better in their lives. So what does that tell you? It tells you that Darwin was right. It's a continuous struggle. And I don't know, it keeps me going. Some days when I get up and I think, you know, this is too tough, or what's the point of doing it anymore? Well, what's this with the election? How much more can I take of this? It's boring. And I think about it. I said, tell me what's easy in life. Is retirement easy? Is just simply drifting off after working X number of years, building a business and cashing in, is that easy? How many people do you know that have retired who do it successfully? I would guess very few. A lot of men retire, they become aimless drunks. They have nothing to do with their lives. All they do is drink. They don't know what to do with themselves. They're terrified of the black hole of the day, which is, of course, why they listen to me. I fill up 3 hours of their day, and then they listen to other talk shows before me, after me, and that becomes their life. I understand that. They live through us. But that's no life. Now, where am I going with this? To this question. I saw a story that I thought would be of interest to you. Is it sane to want to die at 75? This idea was put forward a year ago by Ezekiel Emanuel. His brother is Rahm Emanuel, a Chicago mayor, a good friend of Obama. And he wrote an article that was very peculiar entitled, Why I Hope to Die at 75. It's an interesting article if you believe in euthanasia. Hitler would approve of it. I mean, Hitler thought people should die at earlier ages. If he didn't like their politics, if he didn't like the fact that they weren't perfect, they weren't Aryan enough, he terminated them at an earlier age. The abortionists like to terminate people that aren't perfect at an earlier age, by the way, because you can sell the baby body parts for a profit and call it wholesome, call it women's health. But is the concept of preferring to die at age 75, considering the long-term care problems that millions of Americans may be facing down the road, of any significance? Do you think that when we read an article like this written by the brother of the Chicago mayor, the brother of one of the biggest agents in Hollywood, and a close ally of President Obama, don't you think that we're moving towards the age when the government will start capping the age at which we can, beyond which we can't live? So, you know, it's too expensive after 75, so you're going to report to the life after death clinic, the government-run eternal life clinic. And in the eternal life clinic, you're going to be given a clean robe, you're going to be given a wonderful cocktail, and then society will be rid of you. I think so. That's where we're going. This is the lunacy of the left. They're now arguing that it's a crisis to pay for long-term care. It's a burden on senior citizens themselves to live past a certain age. And long-term care is unaffordable. And therefore, we should terminate your life at a certain age. I don't know what you can say about a thing like that, but that is a topic, right? Getting back to the no-standard society that Obama has created, the Frankenstein in the White House has created a Frankensteinian society where now a journalist is saying correcting grammar is racist. It's an expression of white privilege. Now, here's a continuance to that. Obama's Department of Justice under Loretta Lynch. Loretta Lynch. Attorney General Loretta Lynch. You talk about no standards. Obama's DOJ continues to refuse to call criminals what they really are. Are you ready? Obama's Justice Department under Loretta Lynch now calls young criminals justice-involved youth.
The Justice Department announced a plan to throw $1.75 million at young criminals in hopes that they don't become adult criminals. However, the fog that they created with linguistics is bizarre. They're calling them by that name. Justice-involved youth is what you're now supposed to call juvenile delinquents, also known as young gangsters. This is not a euphemism. This is an example of what I'm talking about, the insanity of the left, if you want to put it in more broad terms, and the insanity of liberalism, if you want to even make it more crafty, is now reaching a point of total insanity. In other words, there are gradations of insanity. When I defined liberalism as a mental disorder in 2005, it was already seen as an advanced mental disorder. But under Obama, it's become an incurable mental sickness. You're calling a young criminal justice-involved youth? You are saying that if you are trying to be grammatically correct, you are a racist? If you correct someone's grammar, you're now you're expressing white privilege? Tell me how this ends unless we stand up to these jackals. Tell me how this ends. Tell me how it ends. Here's how it ends. It doesn't end. You stand up and you fight it. Wherever it appears, you stand up and you smile and you fight it. Otherwise, you're going to lose everything. Your children will inherit nothing. You don't have to get mad at the person. You can laugh at them. You could say there are standards in every society. What are you trying to do, turn us into primitives? Even a primitive society in which I've worked, they have standards of behavior, standards of performance, standards of character. I spent many a year in villages in the South Pacific. There were men who were better hunters than others. They were revered as better hunters. There were women who were better dancers than others. They were considered better dancers than others. Do you think they would be foolish enough in a village that lives off the land to say that all dancers are equal, all hunters are equal? And if a guy couldn't hunt at all, they would make him the chief of the tribe? How long would that society let that tribe last? About as long as this society is lasting with this kind of rubbish. And so, my friends, I have no conclusion to this problem. No solution to the problem. All I can do is define the problem and tell you that life is a struggle. I don't care what your race is. Watch a chicken being born from an egg. I remember when I was a little boy, and I've told this story once before in all these years on radio, my father made me watch a little chick coming out of an egg. We were up in a farm somewhere in Catskill Mountains, and I saw this little bird, this naked little bird without feathers, trying to poke his head out of an egg. And I wanted to help it. I said, "Dad, he's struggling. Can't we help him?" And he grabbed my little hand and he said, "No, Michael, don't. Because if you touch that little bird and you don't let it struggle to come out of the egg, it will die." Be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. One of my early bumpers from the early days of the radio show. Very popular in the old days on KSFR. I bet some of you are listening were mere teenagers or kids when you listened to that. When that song came on, you knew that old Savage would be along pretty soon and you couldn't wait, right? Raise your hand if you were listening to this show when you were a mere lass of 12 or 10 or 9 or 8. Okay, I can see all the hands going up in the audience of the Savage Nation mind, at least my mind of the Savage Nation. But, you know, we were talking about soul and spirit, and people are asking now, what's the difference between soul and spirit? Well, if I were God, I could answer the question, but since I am not God, I can't answer that question. I do know this on a political level. Boehner called Cruz Lucifer. It's an interesting statement. I don't know why Boehner wouldn't have called Obama Lucifer. Why did he save it for Ted Cruz? This is the interesting thing. Here is Mr. Mild-mannered Boehner, who, you know, I mean, underneath the surface, didn't get where he is by being a nice guy. You know, he had to be a pretty tough customer to have risen to be Speaker of the House and lasted so long, right? No one's a nice guy in politics. No one gets anywhere by being nice. They're all schemers and aggressive. So now he comes up with this thing, Lucifer, calling him Lucifer. What in the heck is that about? Speaking of spirit and soul. So Ted Cruz gets mad today. He turns against Speaker John Boehner's insult, and he says that the former House leader's attacks reveal something that is wrong with Washington. and that he's never worked with Boehner and doesn't even know him. He said, when John Boehner calls me Lucifer, he's not directing at me, the candidate said in a Fort Wayne, Indiana press conference. And, of course, standing next to him was the genius pick for vice president of a losing candidacy, Fiorina. Astounding. Yesterday was the most astounding day in a politics in my lifetime. A guy loses five states in a row, and he celebrates like he's president already, and then she walks out like in a parallel universe. I am pleased to accept the nomination for vice president of the United States under Ted Cruz. And like she thought she was already vice president. Okay, that's the world we live in. But why did Boehner say this about Cruz and never have anything like that to say about Pelosi, who would more closely fit it? Harry Reid could certainly fit that more closely than Ted Cruz. On yesterday, Boehner, during a chat with Stanford University, blasted Cruz as a miserable SOB and then called him Lucifer in the flesh. Now, I don't know whether the statements that he made are a result of too much or too little Johnny Walker read, but they didn't make any sense. Boehner said, I have Democrat friends and Republican friends. I get along with almost everyone. He said, but I have never worked with a more miserable SOB in my life, Boehner commented. He further said that he and frontrunner Donald Trump play golf together and are texting buddies, but he would not vote for Cruz even if he does get the GOP nomination. But today, Cruz said he's never worked with Boehner. He's only met him two or three times. So why he would come up with this is a strange, strange deal. And Boehner himself is a strange man, by the way, given what he did to we the voters. Nevertheless, that's what makes politics, I guess, so disgustingly interesting to us. And remember, tomorrow, right here on your local station, Donald Trump, to further his ideas on America First, with yours truly, Michael Savage.